Welcome to Tyler Sen Podcast, episode 355. Two losses on the road, back to back, has led us to a point where we are really standing over the precipice now. It's not good reading, whichever way you look at it, and here to chew over, hopefully, some positives in amongst all the debris of negativity, if you like, is Ross. You're on a holiday today, aren't you, mate?
Yeah, I'm having a good, I'm having a pretty good time, but it's been a, so it's a holiday weekend in America, but we've been doing a youth football tournament through the whole weekend. So my team unfortunately got knocked out this morning with a game kicking off at 8 a.m. So it is a holiday, but it has been a busy holiday, but all in the world of football. So, you know, it's a good thing.
There are worse places to be generally, I guess.
Than exactly. The yeah. Can't complain.
Not so much in Reading FC world, but we'll come to that in due course. As always, thank you so much to our sponsors, ZCZ Films, who continue to prop us up in these troubling times. We must really appreciate what you do for us, and hopefully we repay you in some small way with what we're putting out. So, we're gonna dive into the recap with two games that did not go the way that we all wanted it to be. So, we are going to head into that right now.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
Right, Ross, let's start with almost a week ago, really, recording this on Monday night. We went up to Northampton on Tuesday evening. And yeah, it was a bit of a horror show. Overall performance probably wasn't great, but ultimately you have to look at one man and his role in that, and that's unfortunately David Button. You can set up the team any way you like, you can coach him to the nth degree, but when you've got a goalkeeper who really threw in three goals, you're always going to up against it. Looking at it, obviously there were problems, effectively all over the pitch, and we'll pick those apart in a little while. But, for you, what were the biggest issues on the night?
I mean, it is a little bit tough to look past Button, isn't it? Unfortunately, it reminded me a lot of the Rotherham game last year, where Lumley had his as advertised afternoon, basically. And obviously with Button, he's been pretty good since he came in. I think I wrote in my writings that he's been either unremarkable or good since coming in, but this was unfortunately just not the case against Northampton. The first one was kind of the thing that painted how the rest of his evening was going to go. I think that the first one is the worst of the three, because that's one whereby he manages to get his body pretty much in front of the ball, but it somehow gets through him and into the back of his net. Whereas the others, at least he gets a push on them and he just can't really get any sort of power on them. So I think it looked to me like the first one really shot his confidence. And then after that, he just wasn't making strong saves. So yes, Button obviously pretty responsible for the size of the scoreline. I don't think that we deserve to lose that game 3-0 necessarily. But Reading weren't doing enough going forward either. So it was a bad night for Button, but it was really exacerbated by Reading not doing much in the other departments.
Well, I think one of the positives was that Ballard got on the score sheet. You know, that was probably quite good for his confidence to settle down. You know, came on and scored, fairly well taken goal. But the problem is that when you are consistently overrun in the way that we've been overrun, time and time again in certainly away games, he set us up for 4-2-2-2, which is what he wanted to go with. There's no width in that team at all, and when we're going forward, let's think about what we had as those midfield two in terms of Savage and Wing. There was no opportunity for them to get on the ball and play it, which is what they were brought into the club to do, by the way, because there's no width. Northampton scored early on. They put 10 players behind the ball, pretty much. It becomes impossible to break that down with the narrowness of our play and the style of our play. And it was incredibly frustrating. And you could see the players getting frustrated with it. And there didn't seem to be any kind of impetus from the bench to bring players on. to kind of affect the game. You know, obviously Ballard came on score, but apart from that, there was no real emphasis to try and change the biggest problem, which for me was the way the midfield was set up. You know, and kind of Sellers needs to look at himself with that really, and we'll talk about the Orient game in a minute, but you know, with those players in midfield, they were just chasing the game. After Northampton scored, they were literally just trying to put tackles in to stop that one-way traffic going through the middle.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, in terms of, I mean, we have to talk about Andy Yeardom as well, because obviously he got sent off from the bench, which quite honestly is, yeah. Well, it's unforgivable, really. I know that sounds a bit dramatic, but the position we're in, you know, and we've talked about experienced players, but that's not really what you want to see from the club captain, is it, Ross?
No, of course not. No, it's not what you want to see. And obviously the games that he's going to miss out on in being depth on the bench, especially in a period where we don't have Mbenge right now, and Abrefa appears to have just disappeared from the squad. You know, it's an issue. So I think that you're onto something, though, when you say that there was frustration from the players with maybe the strategy as much as anything else boiling over. And I think that you're right about that, because, I mean, you're right, there's no width. And we're playing this, what Ryan a few weeks ago called that 4-triple-2, where we have everyone sort of playing a little bit centrally, but no one really 100% sure what kind of position they're covering. But it does appear that they have been told to go central. Paul Makairu came into the lineup for the Northampton game and just really had a stinker. And it seemed to me that he was brought in to try and provide some more direct running and some more fronting up his man and taking people on 1v1. But he seemed to interpret that in a way where he was driving the ball into the middle of the field, sometimes without getting out of our half first, which is just leaving us incredibly wide open. So it does appear that there are some issues now with the formation. I don't necessarily think that formations are the be all and end all of football tactics. I think it's kind of, you know, where you start as a team, and you tend to move around as the half goes on and change things up, and substitutions might end up changing your shape and all those kinds of things as well. But I think it is probably time just to kind of like show the fans and show the team that he is willing to be flexible. It's probably time to attempt something from Sellers differently, and that might lead to some of that frustration dying down a little bit from the players.
Well, fast forward to Saturday, you know, Sellers had the perfect opportunity to change it. Admittedly, he brought in Ballard, Nibbs and Hutchinson, which, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, he's obviously seen something that I haven't, because I don't understand that one. But exactly the same formation, Button plays again, and lo and behold, what happens? Button cost us a point, or 2 points. We don't want to be on here digging players out, but for me, the position we're in and the kind of the desperate need that we've got for points and just to pick up results, and to be honest with you, just not lose the game, you then should start a goalkeeper that basically let in 3 goals on Tuesday night. He was at fault for all 3 goals. With the Hutchinson thing, I just don't understand how he looked at Tuesday and thought, I need to take Savage out. If it was for a rest, fine. You know, I want to see these players play, but at the moment they are absolutely being flogged to death here because there's no one else to come in and take their place. So these players have got to play a lot more than they were ever set up to do at the start of the season. But, you know, he picks Hutchinson. We're told that he then got injured in a warm-up, which, again, is a fairly unusual occurrence, but whatever. So Savage comes in. Ballard, I understand. Nibs, maybe that was probably a good shout. But to then do exactly the same thing and set up in, you know, the 4-2-2-2 formation with Hutchinson coming in shows you, to me, that his mentality with the way that he sees the game going is that they're just going to try and defend for 90 minutes.
Oh, it's so, Savage coming in. Or it kind of reminds me of when Paunovic was always running in a 4-2-3-1 and it didn't really matter if he had real wide players in that wide position. And I think he said at one point, positions don't really matter, which, again, like, I don't think that they're the be-all and end-all, but I do think that you need to play players in positions that are going to help them, and right now this formation doesn't appear to be helping the players.
You know, pretty much he brought in both NGW and Holmes back into the squad, which, you know, is a decision that he felt that was best for the team. We talked a lot about Nesta Guinness-Walker last week, and, you know, we both agreed that he was probably now, if we're going to change formation, the right guy to come in. Again, not really have any issue with Holmes, but I don't see what he offers that other players don't. So in terms of the way that, you know, the game went, it was wholly unavoidable. It really was. You know, we got ourselves back into the game with your mate Bindon popping up with one at the right end. And then we just invited the pressure. You know, we just invited it and we let them get back into the game. Ball comes in. You know, he's got three players round him, Button, when that ball comes in. He drops it in his pike time. And it's just, you know, these decisions are, and these mistakes are costing us points and they're costing us games. At what point, Ross, do you, as manager, do you just completely rip it up and start again? You know, is that time coming, or are we looking really, and it has to be said, are we looking at someone who is now fighting for his job in the dugout?
Oh, gosh, that's a difficult question, isn't it? Because it's difficult to tell at the moment what is, you know, like inextricably linked to what's going on off the field and the fan protests and the owner issues and all those things, and what is, you know, just actually related to the football that they're playing. But I think that this is probably the week where the dam's broken a little bit on there being clear reasons to criticize Sellers's management so far of the actual game situations, I think, and the team selections and things like that. And like I said, I know we've banged on about the formation a bit. I do think that just putting the team into something a little bit easier and a little bit simpler at this stage might be the way to go there. I think Button, it's difficult, right? Because with that last goal, I really struggle with, I feel like, yeah, like you say, he's got to come through three people to try and get that. And you wonder why the more experienced players in the lineup aren't clearing the players out there. I was pretty disappointed with Lewis Wing on Saturday. He has to be one of the more experienced players in the team. And he just wasn't really helping in that sort of way. You know, I know he's only just come to the team, but he's been a good player in League One. He's scored, he's made goals before. I'd like to get a little bit more out of him, and so a little bit more out of players like Harley Dean, who with that Button mistake at the end can come and help clear out that front of the goal. So yes, I think that there are some Sellers issues. I also think that we're still just not quite doing like all of the basics that you need to do to win football games away from home. And those are just some of the things that the players who have been around more need to be imparting onto the younger players. So I do still think that going with the youth, as Sellers has done, is the right thing to do. But because we're not seeing the step up that we need from the experienced players at the moment, but giving them something a little bit easier to wrap their heads around formationally, tactically, I think is going to be needed. Otherwise, Sellers is going to be under real pressure very soon.
I mean, talking about those experienced players, why? Let me try and rephrase it. So if I'm a young player in that team and, you know, things aren't going well and I'm looking around, I'm looking for someone to pull us out of it. Right, I'm looking for someone to go, right, this is what we're going to do. We're going to step up. We're going to do this. We're going to do this. Why are those experienced players, in your opinion, not doing that? Why do they seem incapable at this stage of being able to lead? Are kind of unable to take the game by the scruff of the neck? Why does it look to the paying fan that they are not communicating and they are not supporting those young players on the pitch?
Well, it's a tricky question, isn't it? Because I'm trying to think like who we're really thinking about with the experienced players at Reading, because there's almost like a few different cliques of them at this point with the having been such a big clear out at the end of the year. There's only really, I guess, Yeardom, isn't Bengay an experienced player at this point? There's Holly Dean, obviously Lewis Wing, like I was saying.
I suppose, right, it's difficult, and I guess that's where the problem comes, because what I mean by experience would be players that have been around the club for a little while, players that have you know, presided over probably one of the worst periods we've ever had, right, or I've ever had watching Reading. And I guess, you know, someone else will go, well, hold on a minute, it's how many games they played. You know, these young players that we're trusting at the moment, you know, rightly or wrongly, collectively have probably played, what, 160 games between them at professional level? Maybe.
Maybe even less, I would say.
Yeah. So when we're talking about experience, we're talking about players that have had, you know, a career in a game, that have got individually 100-plus appearances across a selection of professional leagues, basically.
Yeah, I don't know if it might be that they're not buying into the system and the way of play in the same way that some of the young players can, because we saw players like Ballard like really excited to come and play with Sellers again, right? Because he gave him his start in the Premier League and all these kinds of things. So there are some managers that do tend to just do better with youth players and players that are a bit more willing to learn. I'm the most famous example being Pochettino is better with youth players than he is with experienced players. So maybe that's what's going on. Maybe the older players have been through some guys like Sellers before, and they see him as more of a, you know, with like a Jose Gomez, more of a used car salesman than the actual motivator that the young players are able to see him as at the moment. Maybe that's what's going on, and maybe they've downed tools already. I really hope that's not the case. But if that is the case, that just gives even more reason to want to watch the younger players, right? So, I mean, it's really tricky. I don't think that there's really anyone in this squad who can necessarily take a game by the scruff of their neck. We have been told that might be Lewis Wing, and so that's where my disappointment came the other day. I'd like to see him become the player that really like steps up and shows some of these young players how to be effective, you know, as well as just being talented. And I didn't quite see that yet. So, yeah, a little bit of a disappointing week from the experienced players.
You know, sticking on Ori and to kind of wrap the game up and sticking on Sellers, last week we talked about formation and potentially that not being the problem. You know, now I think he has to change that. There's no way that he can continue with this because it's not getting results. We're losing games. And generally the confidence level of these young players is dropping, which is like the worst possible time to have that. You know, I'm quite grateful that we've got, you know, after tomorrow night, you know, 2 weeks off or whatever to kind of regroup.
Exactly.
The biggest mistake for me that he's made over the last couple of games is for some bizarre reason, standing and watching, you know, our fans abuse the players. Now, they might come back and go, oh, which is we're having a go at Dean because he laughed or whatever. But ultimately, what needed to happen, in my opinion, was acknowledge the result, acknowledge the fantastic support that our fans have given yet again away from home, and then get everyone off the pitch. Because actually, what unfolded was just an embarrassment on everyone's part. And now the problem is that video has been posted, rightly or wrongly. All the other big accounts have got hold of it. So we're even more of a laughing stock than we were before. You know, you don't want to see this kind of, this element of the fan base criticising the players to the point where, you know, reports have got Nelson Abbey in tears. It's just, you can't even make it up at this stage, you know, and whether Dean laughed or was threatening the fans, or I don't know, whatever was said, it just get them off the pitch, right?
Yeah, and I think that's right. Just get off the field. I like, because I think that I kind of like go, It's the same as like it bothers me in the same way that when players like pay back fans when they've lost heavily or something like that, like that's part of football. Like I know that life really sucks for Reading fans right now, and like Reading fans have like a right to yell whatever they want, you know, when they're there. I do think that it's better that they be supportive, obviously, but if you're paying customer, I guess you paid to say what you want. If I'm Sellers, though, that's not someone that you want to, you know, those aren't people that you want to go over and try and have a conversation with, because at that particular time, nothing good's going to come of that. You know, you're not going to break through. You're not going to come up with the new formation in that conversation, right? So just get down the tunnel, protect the player's mental health, and just move on to the next game.
And, you know, we've got this ridiculous situation now where all the players that stood and took it, apart from Dean, by all accounts, are now heroes and they're amazing and the rest of it. But the other ones that didn't, are somehow in the wrong for not doing that. You know, Button, to his credit, Button had the right idea from what I've seen. He clapped, he said sorry, he went. You know, just this bizarre kind of situation where there was just like a massive standoff. And it just escalates and escalates. So, you know, me personally, I don't want to see that again. You know, we know but where we are.
I do think it, I agree with you. I don't want to see it again, but I do think I think the point I was making, it's worth saying, I don't want to see it from sellers either. I just don't, there's no point. Like you're, because at this point, like every single time that happens, is that the expectation that you go and get involved? Like
he did it the other week and nothing changed.
Yeah, so, exactly. So, yeah.
And who was in the middle of that? Hutchinson. And now we've got Dean stepping up. So, you know, it just creates these problems. Forget what they're doing on the pitch. It just creates this personality issue where, you know, rightly or wrongly, they'll go, well, I don't want to do this anymore. Like, I'll go to League Two and play for a club that's kind of pretty well-rounded and I'll earn less money, but it'll be a lot happier experience for me as a young player. Do you know what I mean? It's just nonsense, the whole thing. And it was really, really disappointing. So, you know, you're right. What's he, every time we lose, is he going to go and do that?
Right, exactly. It doesn't
make sense to me. It really doesn't. Yeah, I mean, the only positive to come from this weekend is that the women won 1-0.
Yeah,
Pia exactly. Primer, who I absolutely love, by the way, as a player, a fantastic player. That's got us, you know, 2 wins in the last 2, on the move now, 6th in the league. Like we're looking all right in that respect. So there is a balancing element to what is going on with the men's, and the women at the moment are kind of really starting to, I say, build momentum. It's still early days, but it's been a pretty good start to the season. Do you know what I mean? All things considered, they're doing all right. So, you know, long may that continue, and, you know, very, very pleased that's kind of happened for them. So well done to the women. We are still due to get the management GO on here, actually. I need to get back on that and get them on, because it would be really interesting to, you know, to pick their brains about how it went in the summer and what they've been able to do in, quite honestly, a really short space of time. So, watch this space for that one. We'll get that one sorted for you. Ross, it won't surprise you that we've got an absolutely massive mailbag. So I reckon we should get on with that right now.
All right, let's do it.
Keep up to date with all things Reading FC. Follow the Tilehurst End on Facebook and Twitter.
This podcast is proudly sponsored by ZCZ Films. Remember, if you want to get involved in sponsoring the show, drop us an email to thetilehurstend@gmail.com.
Welcome back to the Tilehurst End podcast, episode 355. We've got a fairly big mailbag, as you probably imagine, after 2 losses. A few people kind of just, you know, venting, but that's perfectly reasonable in the current state of affairs. Andy McIntosh, this is the collector's item. This is via email, Ross. Don't get many of those, do we?
There you go. Nice. Yeah, Andy. Did you check the pigeon carrier box as well before we...
No, I didn't. I should have done, right. Shouldn't I? But yeah, no, it's, we love an email. I love a podcast question via email. So thanks, Andy. Yeah. He says, with this squad, it seems more likely than not that we will end up in League 2 next season. What chance do you think that we can avoid slipping into non-league? Oof. That's you go first on that one, Ross. That's a brutal one.
I mean, like, I mean, if the trajectory of Reading's recent, you know, downward fortunes is correct, then it'll be a slow 10-year rotting from the inside that'll see us get down to League 2, and then another 10 years after that. So I think we've got a little bit of time to go just now. No, I mean, oh gosh, that's an awful thing to think about, isn't it? But I tell you what, it does make you, I think that a lot of fans this week have kind of realized that we might be in a relegation fight again, despite dropping down another division. And I thought that we'd have a slow start, but then end up finishing 10th later on in the season through really turning it around. And I'm wondering when the turnaround is going to come at this point, and if it's going to be able to come before some sort of takeover happens. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think we're going to be sliding into the National League anytime soon. I really hope not, but you never know right now. I think that it's speaking to that sort of fear of relegation that's really starting to set in.
I think if we stick on this season, there is enough in this squad to stay up, 100%. Yeah. But they have got to start winning games, or at least not losing games quite quickly, because it's likely that we will probably get another points deduction before the club is sold. And I still think that this will be, naively, I think this time next year we will be laughing about this. I really do. And, you know, we will be sort of on the charge to promotion from a league. I don't know which league, right, but, like, you know, from a league. And I honestly think that this will get sorted. Yep. Largely because it can't go on. So it's either going to be admin or bust at this stage, I think. But I do feel that we have enough to stay up, and I do still think that we will stay up this year. I don't know how comfortably, but there is enough in that squad to stay up. The key thing for me, really, is what happens in January, because a lot of these young players might go, do you know what? I've had enough of this, and kind of leave, and then we're even worse off than we are now. At least there is kind of bodies within the club. They might not be the best bodies, but there are bodies within the club that enable us to field on paper what is essentially a reasonably strong squad. So I think we've got enough. Non-league, as you say, Ross, I think is a little bit of a stretch too far at the moment, and I can't really think about that at the moment, because it's just, yeah.
No, that's too much. Yeah, that's going too far. I don't want to. It's bad, but it ain't National League bad just yet.
Yeah, but I get what you're saying, Andy, and, you know, we always appreciate, all jokes are, we always appreciate stuff via email, because it gives us a chance to kind of look at it and kind of analyse it a little bit more. So thank you very much for your question. Niall was back with one question this week, and he says, would you have done what Sellers did with some of the squad post-Orient in front of the fans? Personal view was it should have either been the whole squad out, or they just acknowledge the fans, make some apology gesture, and then walk off. We've done that one already, haven't we, I guess? But, I would have just gone, yeah, we've lost again, you know, not flippantly, but we've lost. I'm sorry, thank you for your support, clap, see you later. I don't know where you stand with that one, Ross, really. I'm not, you know.
Yeah, no, I think it's you get everyone together because you present yourself as a team, and you definitely don't split things up like you were saying. You have everybody go by and clap the fans, and then they go to the changing room, and you deal with the fallout from the game away from the, you know, the sort of environment. You want things to calm down for a little bit before you really start dissecting everything, I think. There's nothing to be gained from the first hour to 2 hours after the game finishes. I think that's just time for venting. We got any of that in the mailbox?
Venting? No, I mean, bits and bobs, really. Nothing major.
All right. Fair enough.
But it's all fairly balanced stuff, I think, really. Everyone's got
a very considered fan base, clearly. You know, we're an intelligent lot.
Yeah. Well, I mean, no one's verbally abused us this week, so that's pretty good, I guess. That's what we want from this podcast. Max, just building on it, really, the young ones are the only ones that come out with any credit. It's kind of that experience versus youth, and we'll talk about that a little bit more in a minute. But, you know, he says Abbey, Bind and Ballard had good games. Yeah, I think that's probably fairly true. I think, certainly in the case of Bindon, he's done incredibly well because he's not a fullback, and yet he still popped up with a goal. He was probably one of the best players on Saturday, to be honest, in my opinion. Ballard is a player that I absolutely love. I think he's going to be fantastic for a club. I think he'll be good for us.
Yeah.
How long we actually have him for, again, I don't know. You know, Southampton might go, he's coming back in January, because he just, you know, the mental load of playing for our club might be too much, potentially. Abbey's just been called up to the England under-20s, which is fantastic for him and richly deserved. But he goes on to say, Elliot, Kelvin, CBC, Carson, Makaira, Kamara, they're the ones that stayed and fronted up, which wasn't deserved in his opinion. Again, it's very, very difficult to go, it's deserved, it's not deserved. It's my frustration and my concern, as Ross kind of alluded to earlier, is that there is kind of a bit of a chasm forming in the camp. And, you know, I just get a feeling that it's not probably as close-knit as it was at the start of the season for these reasons. I can't put my finger on it, but it's just a feeling that I have, really.
I think, though, that you think about it, like, Sellers made a statement by removing Carroll early and taking Holmes and Nesta Guinness-Walker out of the team at that time as well, and sort of really limiting the playtime of McIntyre and Yeardom at the same time as well. And I think that that gave us a shot in the arm that we needed, almost like a new manager bounce for a little while there that, that, you know, sometimes teams that are struggling need. But I think that I love talking about youth, right, and how much we want to put as much of that as possible into the team. But I think that sellers hope that some of the newer to Reading players who have played before, like I've talked about Wing before and Dean, would be able to step up and kind of lead his younger players as well. And that hasn't really happened yet. And I'm just, it's tricky. Without a preseason, like we were saying, I'm not super surprised that it's taking some of these kids a little bit more time to work out how to go from, you know, playing well to playing effectively and playing for results, basically. There are periods in the game where Reading can control the ball and hold it around people's boxes very nicely, but they can just be a little bit, they just lack a little bit of directness sometimes, and a little bit of nous and canny, and someone really needs to step up there, and it's not happening. So, yeah, there's something going on for sure.
He goes on to say, I wouldn't change the team on Tuesday as they need to correct this. Well, we'll talk about Tuesday in the preview in just a moment. But yeah, that's an interesting point. Thanks for those, Max. I appreciate that. Dave Harris, Big Dave, Handbags Dave, Handbags Harris,
all right,
says, can you recode our 4-2-2-2 system, please? Recode?
Recode? Was he in Python or those are most of the developers?
On the tweet that I put, right, I've written recoding rather than recording.
Okay.
So he's had me on toast. He's absolutely done me. No, I can't recode it, Dave. Go away. Stop wasting our time on this podcast. I think if you're saying, can we recode it and change it, 100%. For me, 3-5-2. It's got to be 3-5-2.
Okay.
Yeah, well, thanks, Dave. You've thrown me right off now. Goodness, it's good job I'm professional at this, isn't it? Right, Paolo. What a great name. Paolo. Love that. It's a seller's question, Ross. Get ready. He's gone for sellers on this one. Would sellers be doing himself a favour by playing a more popular formation? I love that.
Everyone wants more formations. Just a formation
any other team in the world plays. Yeah.
Yeah.
4-2-2-2 isn't played by many, if anyone. And I feel this adds to the frustration of fans. With a 3-5-2 or a 4-2-3-1, he could buy himself more time and maybe the players would take to it a little quicker. Thoughts on that, Mr. Ross Webber?
I think we've kind of covered this, though, haven't we? And that's my probably preferred change in formation right now is to the 4-2-3-1, just because it's a reasonably simple formation. It won't require the defense to sort of change the roles that they're using in build-up. I do think that a 3-5-2 would probably get a bit more out of Tyler Bindon because you can play him on the right side of a three, which I think he'd be really good as. I think that you see other teams sort of Red Bull, Leipzig will play in a 4-2-3-1 and you know, it works for them. It's a formation that younger players can sort of learn a little bit easier. It's closer to formations they will have learned through youth soccer and, oh my goodness, youth football. Sorry.
people have a swear jar.
I should have an American jar.
Yeah. Every time. So side note, Ross texts me, or I text Ross, one of the two, and he said, I'm just coming on, I've just been to the grocery store. Yeah, and I said, what do you mean? Like, what? So we had a conversation about that. So every time he does something that's really American,
all right.
I don't know. Do I put a pound in or do you put, I don't know, whatever.
I'll put a dollar in the tip jar or something
like
that.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Jump on Patreon.
Exactly. Yeah.
Just to kind of round off the formation chat, though, and this is my question to you, would you go 3-5-2 or would you definitely go 4-2-3-1?
I go 4-2-3-1 just to not change the way in which the defense is playing, because I don't actually think the defense is playing that bad. I don't think that we should have conceded as many goals as we did this week. We might have gotten away with that week with only conceding one, really. There was only really one goal in there that Button doesn't have a little bit of a panic attack over. So, I think that... I think the defense has been pretty good. Let's keep that going, but let's put the... I think we need to establish that somebody is playing directly in the center, whether that is one of the sixes, eights, tens, whatever. Somebody needs to stand right in the middle and take responsibility for creating and being that first line of defense as well.
And here's another question. If you're playing 4-2-3-1, who are you playing in that two?
In the four, see, this is why it's difficult. The wing hasn't stepped up yet, because that's where I would think wing would play, and yet I don't know if he's been good enough, so you might have to bring like Hutchinson in, which isn't really something that I was talking a few weeks ago about not enjoying that. Rashisha, Craig, these are all options. I think that it's going to be Savage and wing, but knowing Sellers, be prepared for it to possibly be Savage and Hutchinson,
because see, that's why I'd go five. I completely get what you're saying, right?
Yeah.
About the defense, because actually, as a unit, when we've been able to pick what is essentially our first choice defense, it's actually been all right. You know, stats wise, interceptions, tackles, completed passes, all that sort of stuff, it's been okay. The problem for me has been the midfield. It's not necessarily the quality. It's the fact that those players have not been played in the right position. So if you go with a five, for me, the most talented players in the team are Vickers, Savage and Elliot. On paper, and from what I've seen, those three are the most talented skill-wise, right? Bindon, I absolutely love as well, and I think Abby's fantastic, but you wouldn't necessarily say that they are, I say naturally talented, but they're a different kind of talented, if that makes sense, in terms of how they read the game. So if you were able to get a midfield that was able to incorporate, for me, Savage, Wing and Elliot as the three, and then you add a Brafer and you add, it's going to have to be Guinness Walker, to be honest, because he did quite well at that last year, that would work, right? Because we'd have a little bit of fitness on the wings, we'd have a little bit more width, well, a lot more width, and we'd be able to actually control the game a lot more in the middle, because those players would be able to get on the ball and actually do what they were brought to the club to do in terms of spraying those passes through. You know, Elliot potentially could play as a number 10. How good would that be in that formation? Yeah.
Well, there's a 10 in a 4-2-3-1 too, but I definitely see what you're getting at. I think both of us are getting at this need to plug up the middle, both vertically and horizontally. And I think that playing a formation that just has more people there is going to help with that for sure, right? I think that this 4-2-2 thing is kind of confusing the midfield as to who actually steps in and who covers. And so going to something that provides an extra man there to make it clear who should be stepping, I think that's the way forward.
Paolo, we've massively gone off on one, but again, cracking question, even better name. So please do send us another question so we can talk about that again. George,
Paolo again.
Yeah, George. His handle is Georgie Dawes. I'm hoping that's a Shooting Stars reference, because I absolutely adore that program, or did anyway. He says, honestly, just at a loss now. I've no idea how to address it. I would say we need a change of formation, but Sellers won't do that, and we can't change the manager or the players. We need change of ownership ASAP, which hopefully gives us a boost. I can't disagree with any of that. I put a tweet up, which I think confused a lot of people, because I should have just used the language that I should have used. And basically my point was that, is there anyone physically in the building to be able to make a decision to sack Sellers? And I'm not, before everyone goes, oh, I'll give him time. Like, I'm not saying he should be sacked. That's not what I'm saying. But hypothetically speaking, is there anyone at the club currently that is allowed or has the authority to sack Ruben Sellers?
It's a great question, because like no one's seen Dion Pang for a few months, and Mark Bowen wasn't allowed to sack Paul Ince for about 2 months last season.
Yeah.
Per The Athletic on both of those things. So yeah, I don't know if there's anyone at the club who actually has the authority level needed to make a change in manager right now, or if we'd even be allowed to financially. You know, are we under embargo again right now? I struggle to keep up these days.
Technically, if you sack someone, that is paying a fee, right? You've got to pay them off, which we're not allowed to do.
Yeah, so I don't know. Yeah, maybe Maybe you just, I don't even know. Yeah. So we're stuck with it. Hopefully we're not stuck with 4222.
And I, you know, I'm not, before people come back at me, I'm not saying he should be sacked, but he's had a shocking week. He's really had a bad week as a manager. I'm lost for words because I agree with everything you've said, and I know Ross does as well. So, yeah, it's difficult. I think the change of ownership probably will come first, hopefully. By then, hopefully, we won't be cut adrift at the bottom of the table and we can actually move up and move forward. But yeah. Who knows? Right, we've got a couple more and then I think we are done. So, Sam Richards goes after me, which is great. I love that. He said that I've mentioned a couple of times that I wouldn't play. Start again. Sam Richards basically said that I've said, if that makes sense, that I wouldn't play certain individuals anymore, and would rather go ahead with youth. He's interested to know which players I mean. Okay, Dean, not good enough anymore. I would get rid of Button now. Holmes, I don't have a problem with Holmes, but he doesn't add anything to this team currently. Yeardom, I'm not going to go down the narrative, he's a terrible captain, he's this, he's that. I thought it was appalling that he got sent off from the bench for using foul and abusive language, because that's not what we want to see. But looking at him as a player, I've always said this, I am all in on a Braithwaite and I want to see him play over Yeardom. And the other one is Hutchinson. And the reason for that, Sam, is that there are other players that are coming through that are either established in the team or are kind of bubbling under in the under-21s that would be able to fill those roles. Yeah. So what I would say is that if you have a collective team that have grown up together, for example, like the under-21s, under-18s, and have come through to the first team, they are going to be more cohesive as a unit, first of all in terms of personalities, but also in terms of the way that each other plays, because they've grown up with that style of play. They know those players, they've been with them for a couple of years. This mishmash now that is just not working for us, in my opinion, would have those five players nowhere near the team currently. Button is a little bit of a kind of like a fickle fan syndrome, because he did have a good start when he came in, but he's basically cost us two games in the last week. And my current mindset is that he cannot be anywhere near the team moving forward. His confidence will be rock bottom as a result of that, rightly or wrongly. But, you know, when you've got Kanaya Boyce-Clark, who, again, is probably an okay keeper. I haven't seen enough of him to really, you know, nail my colours to the mast. And also Pereira, who we brought in, who's basically just doing nothing at the moment, apart from fronting up to, you know, a truckload of abuse. I'd rather see these players come through. It does beg the question, though, Sam, are these players capable, mentally and physically, of playing 40 games in League One? No, they're not. But there is another team, you know, in terms of the under-21s that are currently playing right now, that would be able to supplement that. Yes, they're young. Yes, they're green. Yes, they might be a little bit naive. But I would much rather see some of these players come through. Because if we do end up in League Two next year, big if, we're going to need these players even more. You know, we're not going to be able to go out and buy a brand new team. So why don't we start just using them now? That's my philosophy anyway. And it's a really good question, because I have kind of alluded to it. But for me now, those five players, gone.
It's a good question, and I enjoyed the way that you answered it, because you you went through the list of players that you wanted to get rid, and then you were replying to the questionnaire, Sam, there. But you ended with Hutchinson as the players that you wanted to get rid of. You said, so we'll get rid of Hutchinson. And the reason for that, Sam, is this. So I enjoyed when you were
directing. Well, I've been caught out before, like, he's right to say that. I have alluded to that, but I'm just sick of having these players that are supposed to have been experienced and have done nothing for us. You know,
Dean's the tricky one there for me, because he's just come in and like I was saying, with wanting Wing to have been one of these experienced players that stepped up, Dean would have been on that list for me too, right? So, yeah, it's disappointing to have him there. I think that Yeardom, Holmes, Hutchinson are like you kind of say, remnants of previous teams. I don't know if where I'm at on Button yet. I do think that Kanaya Boyce-Clark is a good option and should get 10 games or so this season to see if he's the guy, because he's looked pretty good in some of the cup games that he's gotten. But yeah, I think it's tricky with the ones that have been around for longer than this season, for sure.
And just to be crystal clear, right, I'm saying Dean for his playing ability. I don't want to, you know, what happened on Saturday is gone now. We've talked about it. But in terms of what he offers a team, he hasn't offered enough in the games that he's played. So, you know, there are other options that we can play there. And I'd rather see those players come through and play and go from there. But thanks, Sam. Appreciate that. Is this the final one? Yeah, I think it is. Nathan Oakes, really vague question, but why is the fan base of the club so divided when we really should be closer with a common goal of getting rid of our disgraceful owner? Didn't see this happening at other clubs when in turmoil. They've entered anger, but never at the players who are trying. My personal opinion is I don't think they are. I think there was a combination of things on Saturday. I don't agree with it. I've said that already. What do you think, Ross? Do you think the fan base is divided?
No, I think that I think that the fan base is always going to be a little bit agitated and agitated with each other because they can't be agitated directly with the players after a bad week. And it's been a really bad week. So I think that it kind of is how it goes. I mean, like, if you go on the Sheffield Wednesday pages right now, you'll be told that, you know, what we're doing as a fan base is, well, we're so united and we're really sticking it to the owner and all of these kinds of things. So I think it's a little bit of a sense of perspective. I think that a lot of clubs that are in tricky situations kind of feel that they could be doing more because it's coming from that sense of just exasperation and not knowing what on earth you can even do. So no, I think that the fans are, if they were divided this week, it's because it's been a really tricky week on the field as well as off the field, right? So it happens. It is our escapism, and it's not very escapey right now. So I'm not super surprised when the fans get agitated with each other.
The final one, there is one more. In fact, there's two more, but I'm going to do the next one in the preview, if that makes sense. Because I told you, Red Lays, you're so popular this week. It's great. These always make me laugh, these questions. Blue and White Jester says, when will football feel fun again? Asking for a friend. Ross, when will football feel fun again? When are we going to be like, yeah, let's do it?
Go and get involved in youth football and bring through the next generation and provide a opportunity for people to play. That's when football's fun. That's good. Go and do that. That's what I'll say as my answer to that, is I'll advocate for, we need more coaches, guys. Be a coach, be a referee, you know, get out there, do it.
I'm laughing because my son played, he was over in Windsor, he was playing for his team in Windsor on Saturday morning.
Nice.
And he's at seven. He's at seven aside now. Scored two goals, but we won't talk about that. But the pitch next to me, the pitch was incredible, by the way. But there was a pitch next to us, and it was a five aside, so it would have been, I guess, 6 and 7 year olds because he's eight. Yeah. So yeah, the coach.
We call those mites here, by the way. But anyway,
okay. But this coach, and they were playing in, they were using Samba goals. So that was a really small setup, so these kids were pretty young. The coach of one of these teams was literally shouting at the top of his voice, "Where's the press?" repeatedly. And I had to stop watching my son's game. So I was like, I've got to see how this unfolds. Like, I've got to see how they respond to this.
Yeah.
They didn't respond to it, Ross. Imagine that. Okay. Imagine my shock that they didn't know what that was.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's fair. The coaching is a lot of fun, but it can be a little frustrating sometimes. So that does make sense. But yeah, there's always someone who thinks that they're coaching the Premier League champions.
Where's the press? 6 years old, unbelievable stuff. Anyway, we digress. We're going to head into the preview now. Local derby, if you can call it that, against Swindon. That lot from Wiltshire coming up. Tomorrow night, live at the St. Carl Eastern Stadium at 7 p.m. So let's head into the preview right now.
There's another huge game ahead for the Royals. So be loud and be proud for the big match preview.
Alrighty, I did say Blue and White Jester was the final question. That's not strictly true because Bobbins has said, Bobbins, who is he writes five things, those articles which are semi-average at best, I think.
They're good. Cover.
Well, they're all right. I mean, there's nothing to write home about, but, you know, whatever. He says, as 4-2-2 seems to be a dud away from home especially, what formation would suit our players best and why? And that links us to tomorrow night, because Sellers has got an opportunity to do something he's not done, and that's change it around. So, Ross, considering that we haven't got a lot of our better players tomorrow because of international duty, what do you do as the coach, manager of Reading Football Club?
I start Tyler Bindon at striker because he hates the Swindon. So I think he can't play though.
He's on international duty, isn't he?
Oh, he's on internet. Yeah, he's going to be the other side of the world, isn't he? Yeah. Oh my goodness, we're going to lose to Swindon. We haven't got Bindon. All right.
We're going to lose to Swindon, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. I tell you what, that wouldn't be a fun way to go into the break, would it? Oh God, I really just want to win because we really need something. That's the primary thing that I'm thinking. I would probably give Wing another game because I desperately want him to get up to match fitness. But I would definitely change the formation. I'm not going to talk again about what I would do formationally. I think we've done that one to death. I would definitely just be playing. I think Wing would probably be the only experienced player that I'd be playing if Nesta Guinness-Walker is going to be part of the matchday squad moving forward. Then I might start him as well, and that maybe makes us available to play the sort of wing back system that you're talking about. There are very few experienced players that I would play though. I mean, they are a League Two team, right, Swindon?
Don't go down that road.
I know. I'm asking for it now, aren't I? Were they? Who was the team that we lost to in non-league towards the end of Pownau's time?
Kidderminster.
Kidderminster Harriers. Yeah. Oh gosh. Yeah. Yeah. I thought that felt like I was stuck in FIFA 2005 or something. That was awful.
So the under-21s are currently playing right now. Well, okay. I say right now, but they're in play, basically. I don't know if it's finished yet. I'll check in a minute. And I was very, very interested to see the team that they had, just the squad in general. So there aren't many players there that you would have expected to be part of the team tomorrow, if that makes sense. So Jamari Clark was involved tonight. Wellens... Jacob Borgney was involved. Michael Stickland was captain. Benjamin Purcell was playing as well. And then on the bench, there was a few. There was a Candy in there. Rowley was on the bench as well. But there was no one that you thought, do you know what, actually, we would have expected them to be part of that team tomorrow. So I think he's got, apart from the fact there's quite a few what I would class as key players out, which probably wouldn't have played anywhere potentially. He's got quite a healthy squad in terms of numbers to choose from. I would imagine that Michael Craig will get some time. I'd be gobsmacked if Rashisha doesn't play. I think Elliot's got to get 90 minutes under his belt. I'd like to see Makairu play as well. Anything up for that? Well, we know that Boyce Clark's going to play in goal because they stopped him going to Jamaica. Well, not to Jamaica, but for Jamaica for the international duty.
Right.
So, yeah, again, it's going to be interesting to see what he does. But the biggest thing really is they're going to be the formation, I think.
It's worth, though. I think you're onto something with the lineup for the U21s today, though. Like, it's worth it's worth thinking about who's not there. Like you say, Rashisha, Craig isn't there. I'm not seeing really any of the sort of defensive players that have been playing for the U21s recently. And Wareham's not there either. Did we say that one already? So that might be another one to come into the team. Sorry, Wareham and Vickers together could be pretty fun. There's some velvet glove and iron fist element about that. That could be a bit of fun. So, yeah, I'd like to see some of those less experienced players. I mean, it looks like, given they're not playing today, that might be happening.
Well, the game has, literally as we are recording this, the game has just finished 2-2 up in Sheffield. They were 2-0 down actually. Obviously, you know, well, not obviously, but Sheffield United had a man sent off as well. But guess who scored for Sheffield? Well, actually, that's pointless. I'm just going to tell you. Rhian Brewster scored for Sheffield United. Remember him?
I'm playing for the U21s now. All right.
Yeah, so I don't know if he's come back from injury or he's well off the boil. I don't know, but it's a good result coming back from 2-0 down away from home is a positive result. So
yeah,
you know, again, congratulations to Mr. Noel Hunt and his team. But and I've also just seen, it's not just like I'm sat here on Twitter or something, because I'm not, because I do my research before this podcast. Swindon Town Football Club have sold 1,393 tickets for tomorrow's game.
Oh dear, so they're well up for it, I'm sure, yeah.
Well, I reckon there'll be about 80 Reading fans there tomorrow.
Right, okay, so, okay.
Yeah.
I hope they have a lovely time, the Swindon fans. Maybe we should just, you know, not open up the concourses again like it's a U21 game or something.
Yeah, exactly. Oh,
we didn't know so many people were going to be here. We would have opened the toilets if we knew.
Yeah, confiscate their McDonald's as they bring it in. Oh, I'm not allowed to say that, am I? But, you know, American fast food.
Yeah.
Well, we'll have to see. For my sins, I'm going tomorrow. I'm sure a lot of you are as well. 7 o'clock kickoff has kind of blown my mind a little bit, though.
Yeah, that is a bit
sort of under 21s. I mean, again, no problems with it, but it's a bit early for a game, isn't it?
You get yourself home nice and early, have a nice
sleep. That's true. Well, it could go to penalties, couldn't it? Because if it's a draw, they go to penalties.
Well, yeah, that's true. Yeah, exactly, yeah. And then it gives you extra time in the pub if you want it too. So yeah.
That's true. If there was whatever a pub nearby, that'd be great.
Exactly. Whatever you're into, it's there for you.
Yeah. Listen, you know, there's been a lot of negativity, you know, floating around on social media and in the press and everything else. But I can hand on heart say that, you know, as long as there is a football club at Reading, we will deliver this podcast to you. Hopefully it'll be me and Ross for the long term until Sim goes, no, get lost, you idiots, or whatever. He's more likely to say that to me because he loves you, Ross. He hates me, but that's true. Fine. But, you know, it is an absolute privilege to do this podcast. We appreciate all of the comments that you make. Might not always agree with them, but, you know, we appreciate the questions and statements and everything you come out with. And as long as there is a football club, we will be here to deliver this podcast because well, I'm speaking for you now, Ross, but we never take it for granted.
Oh, that's all right, yeah. And this has been a good one in that I've been happy in that we've at least been speaking about football, even if it hasn't been great. You know, the fan base wants to talk about formations. The fan base wants to talk about what changes. So, yeah, that's at least exciting for me, who's not so good at keeping up with tax records in a different country and things like that.
Yeah, tax records in a grocery store on a national holiday. Yeah,
exactly.
Listen, Ross, have a really good week. Enjoy your short week, your truncated working week. There's a word
Thank
for you.
Thank you. I'll be shoving about 6 days of work into four. Let's see how it goes.
Yeah. Doesn't really work sometimes, does it? Like, kind of having a day off seems great, but then you've got to realise you've still got to do the work. So, yeah.
Exactly.
We will be back. Well, I don't know. We'll have a chat about it. We have got a guest lined up for next week. So we won't be reviewing anything as such. We'll just be having a chat about Reading Football Club. But yeah, we'll be back at some point next week. And that's a bit vague, isn't it? But we will be back for episode 356. Thank you so much for listening. Really appreciate it. Try and have a good week. Look for the positives. That's what we're trying to do.
Look for the positives, guys. We're talking about football. Look for the positives.
Let's hope for a win tomorrow. Please give us a win tomorrow. Give us something to cling on to.
Yeah.
All the best. Take care of yourselves. Come on, you Oz.